Welcome back. This is the Paula Gordon Show, Conversations with People at the Leading Edge. It is a great pleasure to be with Thomas Frank, Bill Russell, I, Paula. This at the leading edge thing really matters to me. This is where we are and where we are going forward, and it really matters that people like you have taken the trouble to go back and find this stuff that just sounds crazy, but is so important to where we are now.
The research in this book was... It involved a lot of research on apartheid South Africa. Jack Abramoff had a lot going on with apartheid South Africa. A lot of research on...
He was on the apartheid side.
Yeah.
This was the old...
I'm sorry, did I not make that clear?
No, well, I just want to make sure nobody is missing that.
But he was also on the payroll.
Yeah, but indirectly. He always denied any knowledge of this.
Right.
But the...
In my
own opinion is impossible, or highly implausible, let's put it that way. These guys would never say... They weren't racists, and they wouldn't say... You know, I love apartheid. It's a great system. They'd say, you know, this government is a staunch ally against communism and we have to support them with everything we got. And so they would go over there. But Savimbi, who I mentioned earlier, was apartheid's, that's who funded and armed him. He was their proxy in the war against the government of Angola, which was a Soviet client regime. I mean, so that's what happened. Then they did have a second
get together.
The Altamont to Jamba's Woodstock. The Jamba Declaration. This was something that I believe Grover Norquist wrote. He's sort of always surfaces here and there in the Abramoff story. They were great friends, and I believe Grover wrote it.
He's sort of the intellectual center of this movement.
And he is a very intelligent man. And I mean, I want to talk about him later because he's in some ways. Very brilliant, first of all, and second of all, there is no equivalent to him on the left. There is nobody out there figuring out the kind of things that Grover figures out for the right.
But he's a bomb thrower as
sure.
well. I mean, he's an anarchist, essentially.
Oh, well, I don't know about that. I mean,
well,
he's one of the ones that would say things like, you know, I'm not against the government. I like, you know, we need jails and we need police.
And it's important to say, since we're doing words, that is classic libertarianism.
Mm-hmm. All of these guys that I'm talking about are by the way, libertarianism tends to get by as a kind of idealistic doctrine. It gets off the hook. People let it slide. There's a lot of libertarians in Washington, D.C. I would guess almost all of them paid to be libertarians there in Washington, D.C. Libertarianism is really the sort of fig leaf ideology of big money because it's constantly pushing for, you know, tax cuts, deregulation, the whole thing. And nothing is ever pure enough for libertarians. You know, you never actually get to the free market. And so their response is always, well, the reason you have any kind of market failure is because there was still government. Until you do away with government finally and forever, you're going to continue to have market failure. So, you know, I haven't been proven wrong. We libertarians are never proven wrong when, you know, our free market experiment collapses. It's because there's still a little bit of government that's contaminating the experiment.
The problem is anarchy intrudes, but before you get to that pure point.
But we're still back at Jamba, aren't we?
Speaking of anarchy, go ahead. I want the Declaration.
I don't even remember what it is. I have it back in my files.
Not
somewhere,
memorable?
But it looks like it was written by a teenager or somebody in high school. You know, it's just a mess.
You say it conflates the Declaration of Independence and the Gettysburg Address.
It's got lines from both of them all jumbled up, and it's just a...
I'll bet they're not attributed either.
Of course. They're so familiar, you know. But... It was the right hailed it at the time as this great, you know, statement. It was instantly forgotten. The whole thing was a giant disaster.
And a lot of people made money in the process.
In the process of building the right.
All of this stuff. Yeah.
I don't know about Jamba. Jamba was just a big botch.
That's a goof.
Savimbi did okay.
Yes.
Until the day he died, went down in a hail of bullets.
But it's important to say, as all these are happening, lots of profit is being spun off. I mean, you talk about the geography of Washington. It isn't by accident, say you, with great data to uphold the assertion. Washington, D.C. has been transformed into one of the richest places in the world.
It's the richest city in America. It's tied with the New York metro area and the Silicon Valley metro area, but the Washington Post is forever claiming it's the richest. And this is
that
not
came from
of,
somewhere.
It wasn't
a backroom tinkerer who invented something.
No, the standard explanation is it's those damn liberals. You know, you got all those bureaucrats there in D.C. and they're overpaid. And that's get this, Paula. That's actually wrong.
Whoa!
Do you believe in the Enlightenment? Do you think evidence matters?
Well, look, I'm a writer. It matters to me. I mean, I don't know about the public. You know, it matters to me.
So evidence should be. I mean, your argument is that we should look at the evidence rather than the assertions that the language has been abused sufficiently.
that we should look at the evidence rather than the words.
Imagine that.
I'm afraid that is what I believe. Yes.
Well, I'm
one of these crazy arugula eating liberals. I'll go further than that. I actually grew arugula in a garden in Hyde Park, Chicago, in Barack Obama's legislative district.
I knew it was Hyde Park.
That goes back to the question you raised, yeah. Which is, why hasn't somebody else told these stories? Washington is one of the most covered cities by the media. The media is all over it. They've got hundreds of thousands. Last I looked, 4,000 or 5,000 people accredited to the White House.
Oh, I know.
Who sit around and take dictation from
whoever. And you go to the conventions, the reporters outnumber the people at the conventions three to one. So why would nobody write about this?
And the answer
is... Are you just screamingly out of phase? Are you making this stuff up?
There is that. Well, I'm not now. Come on.
I have to ask.
You can read the footnotes. It's all there.
Well, and it is not always the case that reading the footnotes, and it is the case in The Wrecking Crew, and I am here to give evidence that reading the footnotes is as interesting as reading the book.
I have a strategy with the notes, and that's there's a lot of digressions that I can't make in the main narrative, and so they get pushed to the notes. So I have a lot of
data in there,
yeah. And it's really important.
Sorry
stuff.
About that. I mean, I know that it throws off your.
Well, I think it's really important to say the United States started as an Enlightenment experiment. The United States of America came out of an era.
Ironic, isn't it?
Well, it's painful to me that it came out of an era, was created by people who did believe in evidence, who did believe that we should take care of each other.
Respected learning. I went to Thomas Jefferson's University. Why has nobody else done this research? Right. I asked myself that all the time. When the Abramoff scandal broke, I thought, you know, that I was a college Republican. Did I tell you guys that?
No.
Nope.
In the early 80s, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought,
but you sort of have that look.
I do, don't I?
College
you
Republican. Scary, ain't it?
Oh, I didn't last long.
Well, but it's very interesting progression, and you go through that in What's the Matter with Kansas? And you do disclose that you had been caught up in the same magic.
Reagan. Yeah. All this stuff. The reason I'm able to write about this stuff is that I believed it once. I mean, it was a long time ago, but I really, really believed it once.
And it started with that emotion toward that man.
No, it started. The thing was, it was the environment that I grew up in, and that whole the war against regulation. And you know, every adult that I knew was a businessman, large or small businessman, and that crusade against regulation in the 1970s. It just seems so obviously true. It's like, how can a bureaucrat come and tell you, you know, what to do in your own workplace? That's crazy. It's obviously tyranny. And then along comes Ronald Reagan saying this, and I would read it in Reader's Digest and in vital speeches of the day and that sort of thing. And I thought he was so absolutely right and so obviously correct. And, you know, I fell for it. But I was 15, you know. When you're 15, you fall for that kind of Reader's Digest view of the world, that Boy Scout view of the world. Turns out these guys aren't Boy Scouts, though.
Well, the Washington Press Corps is also not 15 years old,
at least
chronologically. But
why did they miss it? Why did they miss all this stuff? Well, okay, this is what I was getting at when I mentioned I was a college Republican. That name Abramoff, it was familiar to me. And I was like, you know, where have I heard that name? And so when he, you know, he was in the media, and the scandal was unwinding, and it was incredible. I mean, you remember all the weird angles to it, all the money that he ripped off, all the emails that came out, all the people that he had connections with who were turning their backs on him, you know, denying that they'd ever met him and this kind of thing. And so I did what everyone does, which is I did the LexisNexis search, and I found every article that had ever mentioned his name. And I sat down one afternoon and printed out the 150 pages and read it. And it starts out, he was chairman of the College Republicans back when I was in the College Republicans. What do you know about that? Then he ran this group that did the stuff with Savimbi, the Jamba thing. Then he ran this think tank in Washington, D.C. And then he became a Hollywood film director. But this think tank that he was running in D.C., then is revealed 10 years later to have been a front group for the apartheid regime, and not just for the apartheid regime, for their military intelligence. And this came out in the Truth and Reconciliation hearings in South Africa. Then the guy becomes a lobbyist for Saipan.
Doesn't that border on treason?
Well, that's not up to me. I'm not a lawyer.
No, but I'm just curious. That to me is just on the ragged edge. Working for a foreign secret service would seem to be
mighty peculiar.
Well, peculiar, but also again, the question of legality in all of this. I don't want to distract us by that, but it just
okay.
Seems,
let's talk about that because anyhow. So I read the skeleton version of his life with the LexisNexis search, and then I was like, you know, I'm going to start looking into this. I call the College Republicans. No, you can't come look at our archives. So I go over to the Library of Congress. Turns out his think tank, International Freedom Foundation, had a magazine, Jack Abramoff Publisher. So I read every issue of it. I photocopied the whole thing. They had a newsletter. I found somebody in New York that had the newsletter. I found somebody that had all their direct mail. They did a lot of direct mail. I found all the College Republicans, somebody else that had all their direct mail. The thing is that to do this stuff requires library research. You can't do it online. And to get at the College Republicans, I had to not just go to the library. I had to make friends with former leaders of the College Republicans. And there are a lot of disgruntled College Republicans who are very happy to tell me about it. And they had been great admirers of Jack. He was a leader of men. He was a great CEO, they would say. And they couldn't understand how this man had become the sort of horrible figure that he did. And anyhow, we'll get back to the South Africa thing, but I just want to say the moral of the Jack Abramoff story, and the reason that it fascinates me is because what it shows is that you can be an idealist and a corruptionist at the same time in conservative D.C. You can believe in these principles of the free market and be bribing congressmen at the same time.
Well, that is a market.
Yeah, exactly. That's the book.
The Congress as market. We're going to be back in a moment with a good deal more to be said with Thomas Frank. Bill Russell, I. Paula Gordon. Be with us when we return.